Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we're going to be talking a little bit more about Tesla's Q1 delivery and production report from Friday. We're also going to hear from analysts and their different reactions to the report. Then we have some news on Tesla in China, comments from Apple CEO Tim Cook on Elon Musk and Tesla, specs on the upcoming EV from Mercedes, the EQS, and a couple other things as well. Alright, so Tesla stock today, first day of trading since the Q1 delivery and production report, finishing up 4.4% to $691.05. That's probably not what investors were really hoping for today after the report, especially given the positive macro environment. The Nasdaq finished up 1.7% today. That's a pretty strong day for the Nasdaq, and a day like that, I wouldn't be surprised to see Tesla up 4.5% on no news. So maybe a little bit surprising to see Tesla not up a little bit further today. But as I said in the live stream on Friday, because this was such a long period of time between the actual report and then the start of trading after that report, in those cases, even over just a normal weekend, oftentimes we'll see companies release bad news on Friday to capitalize on this, but after that period of time, some of the excitement dies off, attention shifts elsewhere. I'm sure that's why, for example, we saw the announcement on Friday of Waymo CEO stepping down. So it kind of works both ways, especially over a longer holiday weekend. I think it's likely that if the market had been open on Friday, the stock would have reacted a little bit more than it did today. We can kind of see that in the volume too, just 41 million shares of Tesla traded today. Versus last week we had days of 35.3, 39.4, and the highest volume day in Q1 was about 89 million shares for context, with plenty of days over 40 million. So as usual, especially in the case of Tesla, the single day stock reaction to news is not always the best proxy for how strong or how negative that news is. It's better to focus on the fundamentals, and as we talked about in the live stream, just to again kind of encapsulate some of my thoughts here, this was a really strong result for Tesla. The main critical argument that I've seen so far, unsurprisingly, is, oh, Tesla only grew deliveries 2% quarter over quarter. Sure, I guess it doesn't sound great, but misses a ton of context, which of course we've talked about, but even if you just take the simple one of this quarter being shorter, and you talk about a more reasonable, normalized number of deliveries per day, well, then it's up 5% quarter over quarter, and that's without any contribution from Model S and Model X, which were about 19,000 deliveries in Q4. So penalize Tesla for that if you want, but obviously, very clearly an easy-to-diagnose one-time item. Once Tesla inevitably gets those ramped up, that should add about another 20,000 vehicles per quarter. Even if we're super conservative on that and just say 15,000, accounting for those very simple things, that would have been 11% sequential growth and 13% growth in deliveries per day. So sure, discount those things if you want, the numbers are the numbers, but understanding these things is going to give you a much better picture of what's actually happening with the business and what's going to happen going forward. Tesla was also able to navigate extremely well through a number of different headwinds in Q1. Obviously, we had the global chip shortages. We had the temporary production shutdown in Fremont due to some delays in parts coming from Texas from the weather situation there. We had the casting machine fire that may have impacted Model Y production. In Q1, we had Chinese New Year. It sounds like Tesla worked through that, but that can also impact suppliers. And then on the demand side, Q1 is the seasonally weakest quarter for the automotive market. And then on top of that, you have this lingering potential for a rather significant US federal EV tax credit, which the prospect of encourages potential buyers to wait and see if that ends up happening. So a lot of headwinds there, and despite those things, Tesla was still able to deliver a new quarterly record. And although Gordon Johnson would like to talk about how Tesla somehow cut prices 15 times this quarter, well, if we look at pricing in the US, obviously the Model S and Model X are more expensive with the refresh. Model 3 and the Model Y, on aggregate, their prices have increased from the end of Q4 due to the performance variance being $1,000 more expensive. Tesla also raised the price of the Model Y in Shanghai at the end of Q1. Yes, we did see price cuts in Europe, but as we had talked about, when you consider foreign exchange rates, as one might do if one were operating an international business, those price changes really just brought those prices back in line from a US dollar perspective. We also have no reports of Tesla offering any end of quarter incentives, which at this point has almost become commonplace, so it's almost unusual for Tesla not to do that at the end of the quarter. And yet Tesla was able to still deliver more vehicles than they produced, which has never happened before in Q1. Now, I don't really care too much about that fluctuation. That's going to even out over time naturally, but it does show that Tesla had no problems with demand, and it shows that their logistics were operating smoothly enough that they were able to deliver a record number of vehicles without having to really push and encourage the customers to actually make sure they take delivery before that March 31st date, which really to a customer is just an arbitrary random day. So all those things we talked about, the market probably hasn't figured out all of those things yet. And as we'll see in these analyst notes here in a second, there's still some concern about how the earnings report looks because there were no Model S and X deliveries. We'll just have to see what margins look like this quarter since it's all Model 3 and Model Y. But the overall point here is that there are a lot of huge signs of fundamental strength here for Tesla. And if the market doesn't recognize that today, or if they don't recognize that after the Q1 earnings, then all that's going to do is set Tesla up for surprises in Q2 and beyond. So anyway, I'm very happy with the numbers. Some may criticize and say, oh, this is just a bullish point of view, or this is rose-colored glasses or whatever, but those of you that have followed the podcast and the channel for a long time know that that has not always been the case for Q1 reports. So a lot of times with Tesla, the news is just good. That's why it's a 600-some billion-dollar company. All right, with that being said, let's move into the analyst reactions. We're not going to go super in-depth on these, but we'll hit the highlights. I think Dan Ives of Wedbush probably capturing the most headlines here. So he has raised his price target on Tesla from $950 per share up to $1,000, saying, quote, "In our opinion, the first quarter delivery numbers released on Friday was a paradigm changer," end quote. Wedbush now believes that Tesla, quote, "could exceed 850,000 deliveries for the year, with 900,000 a stretch goal, despite the chip shortage and various supply chain issues lingering across the auto sector," end quote. We walked through this a bit on Friday, but I know not everyone watches the full hour and a half of that live stream, so based on the numbers we looked at, I definitely think that is extremely achievable for Tesla this year. Prior to the Q1 report, the company-compiled analyst consensus estimate for deliveries in 2021 was 831,000 vehicles. Wrapping up on Wedbush then, they also increased their bull case price target on Tesla to $1,300 per share. That was also a $50 increase from $1,250 before. Other price target increases include from JP Morgan. They've increased their price target from $135 per share up to $155 per share. They're expecting about 800,000 vehicles delivered this year and only 1.23 million in 2023. See how that goes for them. Then we've also got a price target increase from Cowen up to $573 per share from $545. They've maintained a hold rating. Some of the bigger names have kept their targets. So Bank of America first, they've got a $900 price target, but a neutral rating on the stock. And they were fairly cautious in their note, pointing out the 2% sequential growth, saying, quote, "And while this may have been dragged down by transitory dynamics like the next generation Model S launch, we believe a burden of proof remains for the company, given its substantial market cap and valuation premium, in demonstrating that it can continue to drive accelerated growth," end quote. They then note that Tesla's original guidance at the end of Q4 was for 50% plus growth this year, implying a unit level of 750,000 plus, and they say that's just slightly above the Q1 2021 run rate. So, quote, "Assuming Tesla's outlook is somewhat correct, if not potentially conservative, suggests that quarter-over-quarter increases from this point may be just very modest, which we do not think will be perceived very constructively by the investment community," end quote. So, yeah, if Tesla did 750,000 for the year, the quarter-over-quarter growth wouldn't look great, but Tesla's going to do a lot more than 750,000 this year. As for the burden of proof, all those things that we talked about at the beginning, those are the answers to the burden of proof. Tesla's results in these conditions show the strength of the business, much like last year when Tesla was selling every single car they could produce at the onset of the pandemic, showed the strength of the underlying business despite softer top-line numbers. So I think the burden of proof has been met by Tesla many times, but their point about the premium valuation is fair. It's not like Tesla delivering a million cars this year automatically justifies the valuation. That math doesn't work out. It's still determined based on a lot of future growth after that. So despite the fact that I do believe Tesla is undervalued, I do want to make sure that that side of it gets acknowledged as well. So anyway, rounding out the analyst notes here, Goldman Sachs, no change to their price target or rating, nothing major to report from the note. Adam Jonas of Morgan Stanley did have an update, same price target, $880 per share, overweight rating. Kind of a weird take on deliveries though, saying, quote, "While we would prepare for second quarter volumes to fall modestly on a sequential basis, parentheses, chip shortage, the magnitude of the first quarter beat is supportive to full year consensus expectations, which stand at 842,000 units, Morgan Stanley at 785,000 units," end quote. So obviously that consensus there is a little bit higher than what I mentioned earlier. That could just be from a different compilation or updated numbers after Friday's release, or likely both. As for a sequential decline in Q2, obviously I think that's pretty unlikely. From a delivery perspective, maybe it could happen if Tesla built inventory up, but we should have a pretty decent contribution, I would hope, from SNX. Model Y Fremont and Shanghai should continue to ramp up. And the reason noted there, chip shortages, I don't see that affecting Tesla too much in Q2 if it didn't seem to have too much of an impact in Q1. From all the research we've done on that so far, it definitely seems to vary by automaker and how they negotiated and structured deals with their suppliers. And it seems like Tesla, based on Q1, has been able to handle that so far. So I wouldn't expect that to change in Q2. Obviously it could, but I wouldn't forecast for it. Last but certainly not least here is a quick update from Alex Potter, short and sweet. He's kept his $1,200 price target on the stock, saying that Tesla beat consensus, apparently sidestepping the semiconductor shortages, timely there, battery bottlenecks, and shipping delays that plagued many other automakers during Q1. He is still keeping his 2021 delivery target at 894,000 vehicles, and notes some caution around the ramps of Giga Berlin and Texas, saying, quote, "We still think these new factories could cause margin pressure, delivery delays, and temporary multiple compression, but we don't want to overthink these things. Tesla is a flagship holding, and we would own the shares," end quote. Oh, I guess one other one here that I overlooked in my notes, RBC Securities. So I just wanted to point out that they did lower their earnings per share and revenue forecast for Q1 due to the lack of Model S and Model X in the mix, which could definitely be a part of the more muted reaction here from both analysts and the market, though I'd say largely this has been a positive reaction. But again, any mix impact there, that's going to be temporary, though, of course, over time, S and X just become less important overall. And I still think margins can be pretty strong this quarter. Logistics costs may have increased and things like that, but Tesla, remember, only offered the standard range Model Y for maybe a week or two. Otherwise, they're doing tens and tens of thousands of deliveries of the higher priced Model Y, which should be at a very strong margin. So add that again to the list of underlying strengths that we saw here in Q1. So next here, we've got a couple of China-related stories. This first is relevant to that Tesla pricing, though. So this is from Ray for Tesla. He writes, quote, "Note, made in China Model Y sales still remains robust after recent price hike of 8,000 yuan. As of yesterday, the orders placed on January 5th had not been delivered yet, while the website order page indicates delivery time in June for new orders, insane demand for made in China Model Y," end quote. So I bring this up for a couple of reasons. Number one, Q2 should be a good quarter. Tesla should be able to deliver everything that it makes again. But also, let's consider the other side of this. Tesla did just start ramping up Model Y in Shanghai, so there should be a pretty big order backlog right now. That's pretty normal for a production ramp. Well, for Tesla at least. So it's a good sign, also to some extent to be expected, but I think it pairs really nicely with what Tesla provided in the update on Q1 deliveries, saying, quote, "We are encouraged by the strong reception of the Model Y in China and are quickly progressing to full production capacity," end quote. Now, it's not every quarter that Tesla includes little details like that in the production and delivery numbers. Maybe they just wanted something to be in there because they had to explain Model S and Model X and didn't want that to be the only snippet. I think that makes sense too, but the inclusion there, I think, is noteworthy. The other update out of China that I wanted to make sure to mention, someone had actually asked about this in the comments last week, was some of the progress that's happening over at Giga Shanghai. So Wuhua does a great job with drone videos there for Shanghai Wuhua on YouTube. Last week, he shot a video and noted that there's been construction work going on just south of the Shanghai factory on a plot of land there that's about 113 acres that we believe Tesla is going to be acquiring. That part of the story we have actually already talked about in a past episode. So where that process is at is still a little bit unclear to me, but I think the news here is that there has been some construction work that has happened at that location. So some potentially really exciting news there that obviously the market doesn't seem to really be aware of quite yet. All right, next up here are some comments made by Apple CEO Tim Cook about Elon Musk and Tesla. These are made on Kara Swisher's Sway podcast, which was published today in an interview with Tim Cook. Kara brought up Elon Musk's comments that during the struggles of ramping up the Model 3, Elon had actually tried to approach Tim Cook and see if he'd be interested in acquiring Tesla, and Elon said that Tim wouldn't take the meeting. So, asked about this, Tim Cook says, quote, "You know, I've never spoken to Elon. Although I have great admiration and respect for the company he's built, I think Tesla has done an unbelievable job of not only establishing the lead, but keeping the lead for such a long period of time in the EV space. So I have great appreciation for them," end quote. So some pretty nice comments there from Tim Cook, probably not all that surprising. He's pretty diplomatic in situations such as these. I do think it's interesting, though, that they've never even spoken. As for Apple's interest in the car space, Cook said, quote, "In terms of the work we're doing here, obviously I'm going to be a little coy on that. The autonomy itself is a core technology in my view. If you sort of step back, the car in a lot of ways is a robot. An autonomous car is a robot, and so there's lots of things you can do with autonomy. And we'll see what Apple does. We investigate so many things internally, many of them never see the light of day. I'm not saying that one will not," end quote. Kara followed that up asking, would it be in the form of a car or the technology within a car? Tim said, yeah, I'm not going to answer that question. Kara said, I think it has to be a car. You can't just do the tech. You're not Google. Tim said, quote, "We love to integrate hardware, software, and services and find the intersection points of those because we think that's where the magic occurs. And so that's what we love to do. And we love to own the primary technology that's around that," end quote. Circle back to that previous response when he said, quote, "The autonomy itself is a core technology in my view," end quote. So yeah, probably well answered by Tim Cook. I don't know that there's a ton that we can really glean from that, other than what we already knew, that Apple is kind of working on the project in some capacity. All right, we've got one more story here, and then just make sure to stay to the end. I do have another announcement, but I think this one's actually pretty interesting. So we're going to talk here about the new specs that have been announced for the Mercedes EQS. This will be the upcoming all-electric, essentially S-Class variant. You may remember we talked about the interior and the screens a week or two ago. Mercedes has now shared more details. We don't have everything yet. I don't think we've seen pricing. But they did share some interesting details about the battery. So we've got battery size, we've got their projected range, and we've got charging capability. So on the battery size, they plan to offer two different variants, one 90 kilowatt hours and one that is just under 108 kilowatt hours. And importantly, they note that that is quote unquote usable energy content. So presumably the actual packs are just a little bit bigger than that. They note that the EQS, which will come out later this year, quote, marks the launch of a new generation of batteries with significantly higher energy density, end quote. Those batteries pair with a coefficient of drag that Mercedes says will be 0.20, which would be a record for a production car, potentially slightly edging out the refreshed Model S, which comes in at 0.208, and Tesla notes that's the best on Earth on their website. So new batteries, low coefficient of drag, Mercedes says this is going to give them a range of up to 770 kilometers on the WLTP test cycle. That's 478 miles. Generally, range comes in a lot higher on the WLTP test cycle versus the EPA test cycle. It is different for every vehicle, so it's tough to know how that's going to translate over to the EPA range test. But in general, EPA results end up being about 89% of WLTP. If that also ends up being the case for the EQS, the EPA range could actually come in around 425 miles or 684 kilometers. And again, that would be with a top-end battery pack of just shy of 108 kilowatt hours. So obviously a lot of details remain to be seen. We have to see how that translates over to EPA, over to real world. Of course, the price is going to be a big factor here as well. But if Mercedes is getting 425 miles, that's pretty solid. We already talked about the interior. I think the interior looks really good. Mercedes says the EQS can be charged with up to 200 kilowatts at fast charging stations. So this could be a very viable electric vehicle, especially for those that prefer the Mercedes interiors, and especially if Tesla opens up the supercharger network. So this is one that I'm definitely excited to learn a little bit more about, and I'll definitely be keeping a close eye on it. Looks like a good effort from Mercedes. Should be a decent portion of buyers that are comparing this with the Model S, but I'm not worried about this from a competitive advantage standpoint. Again, they're talking 108 kilowatt hour battery there. As we had previously talked about when the refresh happened, I'm thinking Tesla is using something below 100 kilowatt hours, maybe 95 to 90 range, and Tesla is getting 412 miles out of that, so obviously that's born out of speculation a little bit, but if that is in the ballpark, then Tesla still has a pretty significant powertrain advantage there, plus then you add in, you know, cheaper cost of batteries per kilowatt hour, et cetera, et cetera. The EQS isn't something that worries me as an investor, and the Model S just isn't that important to Tesla's business overall, even with the refresh these days. I think the EQS is potentially much more threatening to a company like Lucid than to Tesla. If it does bring on any concerns though, Mercedes here says, quote, by as early as 2030, the company wants more than half the cars it sells to feature electric drive systems. This includes fully electric vehicles and plug-in hybrids, end quote. Okay, so super heavy hedging there. By as early as 2030, so it could be later, the company wants more than half the vehicles to be EVs, and that includes plug-in hybrids. Pretty unambitious statement there from Mercedes. Kind of sucks out all the excitement from the room from this EQS announcement. All right, lastly here, just a quick update on the channel. If you're interested in working with me in some capacity, I want to hear from you. I've got a number of things going on behind the scenes that unfortunately I just can't really talk about yet, but I'm always working on these things. I want to bring in some people to help open up both time and maybe contribute to some of these other things as well. Or maybe you've got a great idea about something that I could do that's going to bring value to people that you're suited to help with. So this is intentionally open-ended. There are some specific things that I do have in mind, but I want to hear from people about what they want to do and then figure out how to best use those skills and interests. And maybe there's some overlap there, or maybe some new ideas pop up. This could be anywhere from an internship to part-time to full-time, and it doesn't even need to be specific to Tesla. All options are on the table here. So if this is something that sounds interesting, if there's an idea that's already in your head right now, send me an email, no more than like a couple hundred words. You can attach a resume if you want, not necessary. Explaining specifically, number one, how you think you can help, and number two, why you're particularly well-suited to help with that. The email address for this is maurworks@gmail.com, so maurworks@gmail.com, and I would again emphasize, be specific with how you think you can help. I know people may just want to generally help, and that is amazing. That's awesome. I may be looking for something like that in the near future, just not in this instance. Please send the email. Don't reach out on Twitter because the DM system is kind of a mess, but that is it for today then. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter for other purposes at Tesla Podcast. And I'll see you tomorrow for the Tuesday, April 6th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.